Good evening. We're live.
Okay. We're going to be getting things set up.
That's my job.
Thinking of a little story to tell while we were getting ready, and I'm missing it. So I got to think of a.
I could tell a story too, but I could share stuff. I mean, do I need to tell a story?
I'll tell you what. Hang on, and here's what we're going to do. Think about an alabaster box. Now, I don't really have a story about this, but what is an alabaster box? And you might be thinking of a little, something like a little box, maybe like a shoe box or something like that, and what alabaster is, because we're going to talk about breaking the alabaster box this evening. Matthew chapter 26 is where we will go. And we were discussing something else that had my mind off.
I need to try to think of a little story before we begin,
but we're good. I need to do the passcode.
Yeah, if you just or put your finger on it, that way I don't break into your stuff.
And if you will, while we're getting started, since you're tuned in, go ahead and fix this up where you can share the broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll improve our audience. I will say this. We did not have the meeting last week. My mother-in-law passed away, and we were occupied with that. She was not doing very well at all on Thursday, and by Friday evening, she had breathed her last. This is Jean Real, preacher's wife, the wife of Clifford Real. And we had a very lovely, simple, beautiful family funeral for her on Monday. And really, it's one of those things where we're going to miss her, and we're so happy for her because she's earned her reward. Mm-hmm. I don't know if earn it, but she is ready for her reward.
That's it.
And we're going to miss her, but it was a very peaceful passing. So I appreciate you bearing with us while we're not able to make this. And are we ready to go now?
Well, they don't know who you are. Well, they probably know. But in case somebody knew, introduce yourself.
I am Bill Boyd. I'm the preacher at Rock Cliff that is located at the foot of Ben Lomond Mountain between McMinnville and Biola.
My name's Justin Reed, the pulpit minister for the Wood Church of Christ. We're located at the base of Short Mountain, Cannon County in Woodbury, Tennessee. And you'd be welcome to any and all of our services. And I want to just quickly plug, we are going all back in this coming Sunday. So hope you can come join us.
Okay.
We'll still live stream too, but we'd love for you to come be with us.
Getting past the COVID
crisis. What we're looking forward to.
That's right. Oh, what an interesting story we have tonight in the life of Christ. Mary's alabaster box. Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to see that this was Mary, the wife, the sister of Martha, and her brother was Lazarus. So you got this little family of Lazarus and Martha and Mary, but Matthew's not going to tell us that.
No.
Tonight we're going to look at least three accounts of this story in Matthew and Mark and John, and a similar account of a different story in Luke. And I'll just enough of that to show that that's a different account that deserves its own program sometime if we ever go through Luke. But we'll zero in on this one, where the woman breaks the alabaster box and anoints Jesus with this precious ointment. And one of the things I want you to look for in this is what we learn about Mary. If you do not already just love Mary, the sister of Martha and the sister of Lazarus, if you don't love her now, by the time we get through this story, you're going to have a little insight into her that I think is really amazing. Of all the apostles, more than the apostles, she was really in tune with Jesus and heard him and understood him when even the apostles seemed oblivious to some of the things he was saying. And she demonstrates that in this very tender story that is told of her and that is told wherever the gospel is preached. And you'll understand that as we go. Now, Matthew 26, I tell you, it begins very ominously. And it's going to continue. Matthew now from here through the crucifixion is really a disturbing account that we're going to read until we finally get to that resurrection and things start looking so wonderful and we just rejoice. But it's like a dark cloud has come over and things are looking bad here in Matthew. And that's where we begin. Let's read just how ominously Matthew begins. Read those first five verses.
And it came to pass, when Jesus had finished all these sayings, he said unto his disciples, Ye know that after 2 days is the feast of the Passover, and the Son of Man is betrayed to be crucified. Then assembled together the chief priests and the scribes and the elders of the people unto the palace of the high priest, who is called Caiaphas, and they consulted that they might take Jesus by subtlety and kill him. But they said, Not on the feast day, lest there be an uproar among the people.
And then read verses 14 and 15 of this chapter.
Then one of the 12, called Judas Iscariot, went unto the high priest, and said unto them, What will ye give me? And I will deliver him unto you. And they covenanted with him for 30 pieces of silver. And from that time he sought opportunity to betray him.
Now I want you to imagine, it's turning dark, because the story of Matthew gets very dark through here. And then in this darkness, just as this darkness comes upon us, there's a soft, lovely light and a sweet-smelling fragrance. And that's what we have in this story. And it is very simply told about the woman with the alabaster box of ointment. That's Matthew 26, verses 6 through 13.
Now when Jesus was in Bethany, in the house of Simon the leper, there came unto him a woman having an alabaster box of very precious ointment, and poured it on his head as he sat at meat. But when his disciples saw it, they had indignation, saying, To what purpose is this waste? For this ointment might have been sold for much, and given to the poor. And Jesus understood it. He said unto them, Why trouble ye the woman? For she hath wrought a good work upon me. For ye have the poor always with you, but me ye have not always. For in that she hath poured this ointment on my body, she did it for my burial. Verily I say unto you, wheresoever this gospel shall be preached in the whole world, there shall also this, that this woman hath done, be told for a memorial of her.
Now Bethany, this took place in Bethany. It's a little village just outside of Jerusalem. Not a long distance, a walking distance. In fact, Jesus is at Bethany, and when he makes his triumphant entry into Jerusalem, he walks from Bethany to Jerusalem part of the way, and then rides a donkey the rest of the way in. Mm-hmm. And those followers of him continue to walk, and then he spends the day in Jerusalem. So it's right down, walking down by past the Mount of Olives, and just out of sight, beyond that mount, is the little village of Bethany. Now, it tells us here he's in the house of Simon the leper. Simon is a very common name in the New Testament. And in that period, there's many that were named Simon. And so sometimes they add something to it to distinguish this particular Simon from some other Simon. And he's called the leper. Well, they're sitting at his house and eating with him, which you wouldn't do with someone that had leprosy. So it sounds as though we would infer from this that he had been a leper and kind of had that name, that Simon the leper, but that he had been healed of this leprosy, and probably that Jesus had healed him, although that particular account is not given. But there are several places where it talks about Jesus healing the sick and healing the lepers. So Simon the leper. Now, she comes with an alabaster box of ointment. Instead of thinking of a little square box, and it may have been sort of boxed shape. We don't really know what shape it is, but I want you to think of a bottle. I know the translation here is box, but it's really a bottle full of a liquid ointment. And alabaster is a white stone. Now, it's somewhat of a precious stone because it's a beautiful stone. But you could actually take this alabaster, and they had a way of boring down into it and scraping out around that stone to make a little bottle. Mm-hmm. So you had a little stone bottle, and then they'd make a way to cap that off and seal that. And so the alabaster bottle itself is of somewhat expense.
Yes.
And then it is filled with this precious ointment. In fact, it's filled with a perfume. And the woman is going to then pour it on Jesus' head. Now, we read here about the apostles. thinking they were indignant at this waste, that the money should have been sold and given to the poor. But Jesus understood this woman. This woman, you're going to see, understands Jesus. And Jesus understands her. Mm-hmm. And Jesus defends her. Now, he rebukes his disciples because they did not understand her and defend her. We'll go into this in a little more detail now, but that kind of paints some of the physical mm-hmm. features about this story. Now, this is easily confused with another story that Luke tells. And we won't read the whole thing, but I want to read the beginning of it. It's in Luke chapter 7, verses 36 through 39. Now, really, it goes all the way to the end of the chapter, which is 50. But read those first three or four verses of the story, and I'll point out something interesting here.
And one of the Pharisees desired him that he would eat with him. And he went into the Pharisee's house and sat down to meat. And behold, a woman in the city, which was a sinner, when she knew that Jesus sat at meat in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster box of ointment and stood at his feet behind him weeping, and began to wash his feet with tears, and did wipe them with the hairs of her head, and kissed his feet, anointed them with the ointment. Now when the Pharisee which had bidden him saw it, he spake within himself, saying, This man, if he were a prophet, would have known who and what manner of woman this is that touches him, for she is a sinner.
Now, this story is so similar. In fact, the name of that Pharisee mm-hmm. is Simon.
Yeah.
It was a common name, so it shouldn't surprise us that there would be more than one Simon. It wasn't Simon the leper. This was Simon the Pharisee. Wasn't Simon Peter, but Simon the Pharisee. And we know that because later on, Jesus addresses Simon in this story. But the thing is, see, this story, when you read Luke and see the context, it's not at Bethany.
No.
This story takes place in Galilee. And in this story that Luke tells that took place in Simon the Pharisee in Galilee, mm-hmm. they are no concern expressed here about the expense
no.
of the ointment, even though it was another alabaster box full of precious ointment. But there's no worry about the expense, but rather the fact that the woman that did this was a sinner.
Yes.
And Jesus then rebukes that Pharisee, saying, well, he'd know what manner of woman this is. Like, how could he allow a sinner like this to touch him? And then Jesus tells that little parable, the conclusion of which is, those who are forgiven much love much.
Yes.
See, Simon hadn't taken care of Jesus when
no.
he came to...
He should have washed his feet.
He should have taken care of him. But he felt like he was so righteous, he didn't need to be forgiven much, and he loved little. Mm-hmm. And this woman that was a sinner, she had been forgiven much. And they marveled
yes.
at Jesus' ability to forgive sins. So it's a very similar story, but it's not the same story. I want us to go to the way Mark tells this story, and this is the same story. And it's told in Mark chapter 14, verses 3 through 9. And we're going to learn a few more details now by putting this, kind of overlaying this on Matthew's account. And then Mark will fill us in on a few details that will add to the interest here.
And being in Bethany, in the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at meat, there came a woman having an alabaster box of ointment of spikenard, very precious. And she brake the box and poured it on his head. There were some that had indignation within themselves and said, Why was this waste of the ointment made? For it might have been sold for more than 300 pence and have been given to the poor. And they murmured against her. And Jesus said, Let her alone. Why trouble ye her? She hath wrought a good work on me. For ye have the poor with you always, and whensoever ye will, ye may do them good. But ye have not me always. She hath done what she could. She has come aforehand to anoint my body to the burying. Verily I say unto you, wheresoever this gospel shall be preached throughout the whole world, this also that she hath done shall be spoken of her for a memorial of her.
All right. Let me show something interesting here. And this will be interesting to some of you that are into essential oils.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Spikenard. What is spikenard? I want you to think of an essential oil. They didn't call it essential oils back then, no. But that's such a popular thing today. Think of a bottle that has been filled with a very expensive essential oil. Well, what oil was that? Well, you look this up, and you start getting these different ideas about what that is. Modern spikenard. Well, before I get there, spikenard, that's the King James Version. The American Standard Version calls it pure nard. Mm-hmm. And then in the margin of the American Standard Version, it's called liquid nard. Okay, so what kind of essential oil are we talking about? Modern spikenard comes from a plant in the Himalayas that is much like our honeysuckle. And as I read about this, they dig up the root and they squeeze the stuff, and it's got this pleasing aroma. You know how wonderful honeysuckle smells.
Mm-hmm.
Well, think of a perfume that is of pure honeysuckle ointment like that, and you might get an idea then of what modern spikenard is, or nard. Is that what this was? Well, maybe. But there was a village that they think this was, that nard was named for in Arabia. And it's got, I'm not going to pronounce the name, but it's a very similar name to the nard. And so they think that's why the nard comes from it. And they made a special ointment. But as I was reading about that, I found out this is made of lemongrass. Do you know what lemongrass is?
Mm-hmm.
You can plant lemongrass here. It's a little herb that'll grow. And it has a very lovely smell of lemon, kind of like lemon balm is what it reminds me of. You can tell a very lemony flavor to the smell. And so that, again, you've got a very precious smelling ointment, only this time more of a lemony flavor than a honeysuckle flavor. Okay, I kept reading. And what I think this is, the most credible source I consulted that made sense, is it's really lavender.
Okay.
And lavender, then, the oil of lavender. And the reason it was called spikenard is because it was at the very ends of the lavender plants. The pure nard, where it goes up in flowers, and that's the very most precious part. And so think about picking those little ends of the lavender blossoms, squeezing the oils out of them, and getting them into a bottle. Now, whether this be a honeysuckle ointment, or a lemongrass ointment, or a lavender ointment, that's not what's so important. What is important is it was a very pleasing and expensive aroma. It was so expensive it was worth being kept in an alabaster bottle, which itself is very expensive. So that's what Mark tells us. Mark also tells us its value.
Yes.
300 pence. You remember the parable of the laborers in the vineyard. And the man came out and says, I'll come. And what did he pay each of the laborers that came out at the end of the day?
A pence.
He gave him a penny. Okay, that's a pence, a penny. When you think of a penny, think of a day's wage.
Yep.
That's a common day's wage. Okay, think of 300 days. Now, there's 365 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
In a year, 52 of those days are going to be a Sabbath day where you don't work.
Yeah.
That means that you take that. That is about a year's wage, is what we're talking about. For a common laborer, 300 pence means you'd have to work about a year. And you'd think in those days, I mean, you'd have to save that up.
Multiple years of work to
it would be
put that money aside.
Multiple years to be able to lay that money aside. So this was indeed a very expensive ointment. And it was in this alabaster box. Something else Mark tells us that I think is significant. And really, Mark's story gets a lot of interest because of this. And it says she broke the alabaster box. She didn't just open it and pour out the alabaster box. She broke it. This bottle would be no good. Mm-hmm. And that means that she used all the ointment. I mean, this was not, I've got some alabaster, I'll anoint you with a little. She broke the bottle so she could anoint him with all of it. Mm-hmm. And thus, she incurred not only the expense of the ointment, but the expense of the bottle as well on top of that. So this was like no holds barred.
Yeah.
She is going to do everything she could to honor Jesus on this occasion, and broke that alabaster box. Now, go to John chapter 12, 1 through 8, and I'll show you something you need to do when you're reading these different accounts. Watch what John says in John 12, 1 through 8.
Then Jesus, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany, where Lazarus, which had been dead, whom he was raised from the dead. There they made him a supper, and Martha served, but Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. Then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. Then said one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, Why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief, and he had the bag, and bare what was put therein. Then said Jesus, Let her alone. Against the day of my burying she hath kept this. For the poor always have ye with you, but ye have not me always. Much people of the Jews therefore knew that he was there, and came not only for Jesus' sake, but also they might see Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. I read one too many. Sorry.
That's all right. Interesting, though. When you start comparing this and laying this on Matthew, now we're going to get a little different impression. And one of them is we know who the woman is.
Yep.
It's obvious here that we talk about Martha is serving. Some have thought that Simon the leper may have been Martha's husband, because it's in the house of Simon the leper. Maybe not, but maybe Simon just another friend that invited them over. But they're in Simon's home. Martha is serving. Isn't that just like Martha?
Yep.
She's always doing that. You know, there was that time when Jesus said, Martha, you're troubled about many things, but that's just Martha. Martha's going to be one to get in there, and she doesn't let things happen. She makes things happen,
yes.
And she is the hostess supreme in the Scriptures.
Mm-hmm.
So Martha is serving, and Lazarus, well, what does Lazarus do? He's sitting at the table. Well, that's what you can relate to this, can't you? Where the women are up serving, and the men are sitting there at the table. And that's really the way the women would prefer it. Just stay out of their way and stay seated at the table.
But also, I'd like to note very quickly, this also proves that Jesus did raise Lazarus the previous chapter.
Because right.
Dead men can't sit at a table and wait for food to be served.
That's exactly right. So here we have Simon the leper, whom he probably had healed, Lazarus, whom he'd raised from the dead, Martha serving, and then Mary. And again, Mary is just more intent on, it means more to her to do something special for Jesus than it does to serve as the hostess.
Yep.
And that's much like we read in that story about Luke chapter 10, verses 38 through 42, where Jesus was, Mary was sitting at the feet of Jesus and listening to him. And Martha almost rebuked her, talking about how she had served. And Jesus said, Mary hath chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away. So again, this fits right in the character of these people. And, studying these people, they are so real.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets to where you can almost kind of predict them and know them that way. And that's one of the beautiful things about these characters and these people in the Scriptures. But now John tells us something else. It was 6 days before the Passover.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Matthew said 2 days before the Passover. Jesus tells his disciples that the Son of Man will be betrayed to be crucified. And then it tells this story. How do you reconcile that? Well, see, Matthew is not telling this in chronological order. But as we go into this very dark period of Jesus' life in Matthew, he wants you to know this story. And so he inserts it here so that we will see the preciousness, the beauty of this story with the darkness around it is what Matthew's doing. And John tells it more so we know the time. This was 6 days before the Passover. So we're not talking about contradiction here. We're just talking about different ways to relate the story. And actually, Matthew doesn't say 2 days before the Passover this happened.
No.
But just mentioned, by the way, this happened. and 2 days before the Passover is when he's talking about when he's going to be betrayed. There's something else that we think of here, and that is when Jesus approached the tomb of Lazarus. You know, he called for Mary and wanted her to come. I think that's interesting that Jesus loved Mary too. And Mary wanted to be there. And Mary's the one that came to him and said, well, Martha had too, but if you had been here, my brother had not died. Yeah. I mean, just think of the emotional relationship, of friendship that Jesus and Mary had together. And it also tells us that Jesus, that it was when he saw her weeping that he groaned in the spirit and Jesus wept. Now, again, there's something here. There's a connection here on an emotional level to where Jesus and Mary know how to relate to one another. Yes. And they're picking up on each other. And that's going to play into this story as well in a beautiful way, as we will see here in just a moment. Now, John also tells us that Mary poured this ointment on his feet. Now, earlier we'd read in Matthew and Mark that his head was anointed, and John mentions his feet. Well, she must have done both then. They're not contradicting. And remember that. A contradiction means two things could not have happened. But they could have anointed his head and his feet.
Well, she uses the whole bottle.
She uses the whole bottle. And it's not a contradiction to tell different parts of a story in different places doesn't contradict. In fact, it's one of the great evidences that we have that while these accounts of Jesus in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are similar, they're not the same, but they don't contradict. It's exactly what you would expect from multiple witnesses telling the story from multiple perspectives. And it really, the way they all fit together and lay upon one another, they really reinforces the confidence we can have in this story. I see it's approaching our hour, but this is so
keep
good.
Going.
You're going to hang on to the end of this because it's such a beautiful story. There's something else we learn in John. When the apostles started to rebuke her, it was Judas that began that rebuke. Sounds like maybe the others joined in. Judas had a lot of influence among the apostles. And this is where we learn that Judas was a thief because he held the money bag. And this could have been sold and used for the poor, but he wasn't worried about the poor.
No.
He was a thief. He had the money bag. And he was more looking at the dollar amount than about what was really going on here. And dismissed that. Now, Matthew chapter 26 and verse 10, and in all of these stories, Jesus defends the woman. He says, "Why trouble you, the woman? She hath wrought a good work upon me." Isn't that interesting? I mean, she has done something upon me in anointing that. And he says, "The poor you have with you always." Now, I want you to remember this. You can never, you cannot use religion as an excuse to neglect the poor. That's not going to work. But let me tell you something else. You can't use benevolence toward the poor as somehow a substitute or an excuse for worshiping Jesus and honoring him. It's not one or the other. You do both. And anytime you set one and says, I don't go to church, but I take care of the poor. No, that doesn't work. He wants you to worship him. But don't say, I go to church every Sunday and then neglect the poor. That's not good either. And so you put both of them together. And you can't use one to the neglect of the other. But then there's something else that is so precious. And this really shows how Mary was tuned in. Matthew 26 and verse 12. She did it for my burial. Jesus had been telling them since Matthew 16.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to Jerusalem. I'm going to be betrayed. They're going to try me. They're going to crucify me. And the apostles act like they don't even hear it. Remember, Peter rebuked him when he said it, and the Lord had to rebuke Peter. And it's like they're oblivious to this. But Mary heard. And while his very close male companions were not really receiving this, Mary understood. He did it for my burial. It would be, they wouldn't be able to anoint him between his death and his burial. Yeah. Remember, they took him down the cross and buried him in the tomb that evening. And there's just a little bit of time that takes place there. It's in Mark chapter 16, 1. Do you have that?
And when the Sabbath was passed, Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of James and Salome had brought sweet spices that they might come and anoint him.
Jesus had been buried, and then the Sabbath day they couldn't anoint him for burial. Mm-hmm. And they came on that morning that he arose to anoint him, and he was gone.
Yeah.
He had already risen from the dead, but he had been anointed. He'd been anointed before he died by this sweet Mary that had heard while everyone else wasn't listening. She heard it. Mm-hmm. And she did it for his burial. It's not just like Jesus just was reminding them of his burial again. She understood.
She got it.
He's going to be buried, and I'll anoint him. You know, sometimes we sing that song, "Give me the flowers while I'm living."
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she was doing. She was going to honor him and anoint him before that time came. And then there's something else that is so precious in this story. And it's found in the book of Mark, chapter 14 and verse 8. And a lot of time it captures the whole story to say this. But it says in Mark 14 and verse 8, "She hath done what she could." Now I want you to go into the heart and the mind of sweet Mary here. Mm-hmm. And the events were out of her control. Things were going to happen. She had heard Jesus say this. He'd be betrayed, arrested, and tried, and scourged, and crucified, and buried. And she was powerless to do anything about that. But she did what she could. She did what she could. And what she could do is go ahead and honor him and anoint him. I just think that's such a precious story about how Mary was really intently trying to understand and be part of the thoughts and way of Jesus, and he understood her. And she's the example of how we ought to be in tune with Jesus, and don't just read words he says, but really let those things go into our hearts and believe them and affect the way we think and affect the way we feel, just like Mary did. And so now read Matthew 26 and verse 13.
"Verily I say unto you, wheresoever this gospel shall be preached in the whole world, there shall also this that the woman hath done be told for a memorial of her."
And there it is. I tell you, the gospel is preached all over. And say, "Well, is that true?" Well, it just happened just now, didn't it?
Yep.
We're telling this story. And just think, this simple act of Mary. She wasn't trying to be famous. In fact, she endured rebuke from it. But she wanted to honor her Lord, Jesus. She loved him. Little did she know that this little act would be told all around the world for over 2,000 years now, wherever the gospel is preached. Somewhere along the line, this little story about what Mary did for Jesus is going to come up. So it's an act of kindness. No doubt Jesus would remember the simple act of kindness as he goes through his trial. It may have been part of that that gave him the strength to endure this trial. He's doing this for people like Mary, and so he's going to do it. And it's a little tender moment of true devotion. And Jesus does know. We had read earlier in Matthew chapter 25, 37 through 40, when we talk about I was sick and in prison, and you visited me, hungry and you fed me, thirsty and you gave me drink. And listen to what Jesus said. See, we can't go by precious ointment and anoint Jesus. But here's what he said. Inasmuch as you've done it unto the least of these, my brethren, you have done it unto me. Would you like to do for Jesus what Mary did for Jesus? If you love him, you would want to do that. How can you do it? Do it unto the least of these, my brethren, Jesus said, and ye have done it unto me. And so, that's the heart we need to have for Christ. And it's just one of the most precious and beautiful little stories in the Bible. And then we'll return to the darkness of what is about to occur when we return then next week.
Sounds like a plan. Thank you for that. Do what you can for the Lord. You don't have to do everything, but just do what you can. That's all he asked for, really. And if you want to share this video, I'm sure he'd appreciate it, because I know that we will certainly appreciate that as well. Thank you for watching with us. We'll end this one the same way we've ended every lesson in our series thus far. May the good Lord bless you, and may he keep you. Please continue to pray. Thank you for watching.
All right. Good.